Working Cows Podcast, episode 117.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy everybody, it's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, here with another episode for you guys. I'm powered by the Global Egg Network. Really excited to have a conversation today with a guy who's kind of a leader of a certain segment of the industry. Mike Calicrate is joining me today, and we're going to talk about fighting vertical integration. And really appreciate you taking the time to join me today, Mike, on the Working Cows Podcast.
Thank you, Clay. Thanks for the opportunity.
Have heard from a couple of different sources that I probably don't have much priming to do here. I've watched some of your videos on YouTube too, and gotten some good things out of there. I think kind of the direction I want to go is the answer legislative? Is it judicial? Is it administrative? Or is it something that we do on our end with developing our own market? I think that's kind of where I'm at. I guess where I have a bias towards letting the market solve the problem. At the same time, other people aren't afraid to get an advantage for themselves using the weapon of government. And so I don't know if we can look at that as a self-defense tool or how, I guess, how we should look at it.
And you're really talking in regards to, you know, what cattle are worth. I mean, how do we improve our income at the farm and ranch gate in regards to a better price for the livestock we produce? You know, that's a big problem. I'm just home from the Quivira conference in Albuquerque, their annual conference that includes Holistic Management International and American Grass Fed. And I've always been really concerned that in the holistic view of ranch management and farming in general, that the groups that are out there, whether it's Savory or whether it's the Holistic Management International, or Quivira, for that matter, that they don't have the price sort of on their list of priorities when looking at their operations holistically. And you know, I've been at this about 45 years, and really been worried about competition in the livestock market since 1990. I listened to Bob Peterson's speech at the Kansas Livestock Association in 1988 in Wichita, when he was talking about, you know, how IBP didn't like it that the other packers were owning and feeding cattle and thought they had an advantage over IBP. And he was asking for our help in trying to correct that market problem that IBP felt was there with captive supplies of his competitors. And by 1990, he was back at the Kansas Livestock Association meeting announcing that they had done something about that, that they had developed the formula, which was a way for them to control large numbers of livestock without having to compete for them in the cash market. And so I became very, very concerned. And of course, I was a cattle feedlot operator. I built a 14,000 head feed yard with partners there at St. Francis in 1978, and really felt like I'd been playing the game. I mean, the packers would just take the price down for no obvious reason, from, you know, time and time again. And as a feedlot manager, I kind of felt like I was more of a transfer agent, transferring the wealth of a rancher to the bank account of a meat packer. You know, and of course, as a feedlot operator, you want to be full all the time, so you're always trying to get cattle in those pens. You're promoting retained ownership. You know, you guys need to know about your genetics so you can improve your your bull selection and all that fun stuff that we love to worry about, you know, stuff that we can control, like keeping the waters clean and the feed bunks full and the cattle healthy and all those things that we go to college for and get an animal science degree for. And then find out that the meat packers are just manipulating the price, manipulating the markets, and taking huge amounts of capital away from our ranching communities. And we look back now and we've got over 40% of our ranchers are gone. And, you know, we've got groups like the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and Cattle Facts and some of these that say, well, you're just a bad manager. You know, if you're losing money and going broke in the cattle business, you must be a bad manager. And you got to use your, you got to be a better marketer. You got to use the futures and all that stuff. And so, you know, that got pretty old hearing that kind of stuff when the packers were obviously manipulating the markets. And so I'm questioning, why are the people at Quivira and Holistic Management International and Savory avoiding the market issue? And I think it's because they don't think it's something they can do much about. And there's a lot of reason for them to feel that way. I mean, back in 96, I sued IBP along with other plaintiffs in the case against IBP for anti-competitive practices. We finally made it to court as a class action by 2004, 8 years later. You know, think of the damage that was done through market manipulation in those 8 years. And just the lack of access to a courtroom to settle our differences. And the court awarded us $1.28 billion. They decided in our favor after 30 or more days of trial. Bruce Bass, the IBP head buyer, was the last witness. And he admitted right on the witness stand to the jury and judge that the more captive supplies they had, the lower the price they would bid on livestock. Basically admitted everything. It was a no-brainer for the jury to decide the case. And they awarded us $1.28 billion, which we honestly couldn't care less about. We just wanted a fair market. We wanted injunctive relief. We wanted to get competition back into the marketplace to where we would restore our fair share of the consumer beef dollar based upon really what it was in 1970 when the market was competitive. And I'll be darned if the judge didn't reverse the jury verdict. Away from us and made us pay Tyson's court costs, which Tyson purchased IBP by then, made us pay Tyson's court cost of $80,000. And so basically what that was a huge green flashing light to the packing industry to continue taking away from the rancher and reducing his share of the consumer dollar. And as you've got the feedlots in the middle, the feedlots are just in a hell of a bind. The only thing they can do to make money is to buy cattle cheaper. They certainly can't sell fat cattle higher with the power of the big meat packers and the big retailers who have power over the packers. And so litigation has proven to be a big failure. I mean, we've got a lot of judges that are on the bench today in federal courthouses, appeals courts, and very prominent in the Supreme Court don't believe in regulation. They don't believe that corporations need rules. And we ended up in this sort of no rules, wild west sort of economy where the biggest cheater wins. And you know, JBS is a really great example of that. I mean, look what they've done in Brazil, look what they've done in the US, basically cheating people on the weights of their livestock, you know, polluting the environment, mistreating workers, importing the cheapest meat they can find, in fact, importing rotten meat from Brazil with the approval of Al Almanza with Food Safety Inspection Service, who finally, when the rotten meat imports were stopped by a new Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue, we lost Almanza at FSI. He went to work for JBS, who he was allowing their rotten meat in. So we're sitting here with this totally anti-competitive market situation in our livestock industries for poultry, pork, and beef. And you know, we've already lost poultry and pork to vertical integration. A former pig farmer is probably a hog house janitor now for one of the big integrators. Cattle are the same way. Cattle are their share of the consumer dollar to the market power of the middleman more and more every day. And so we see a failure in litigation. We see a failure in legislation because because of the lobbying power of the big packers, lobbying power of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, going there every day on Washington, in Washington, saying there's not a problem. And of course, the problem is staring you straight in the face. I mean, you know, we can work all we want to be the low-cost producer, but all that means is you're the last one to go bankrupt. You know, because the fact is they can bring in foreign beef produced cheaper than we can. I mean, they live in a different environment, a different climate. Yes, they can probably produce it cheaper, but the problem is those producers are losing too. The same big meat packers are pressuring them to sell below their cost of production. I know when JBS got fined $3 point some billion for bribing government officials, inspectors, and the last three presidents in Brazil, they took it out of the market. The very next week, they lowered the price of live cattle to 20 and 30% of its former value. They took it right out of the land, right out of the ranchers and the cattle producers' pocket in South America. And this is the power they have. And so there has to be a way to break that up. And it will take legislation. It will take Congress to act. And they've already passed the laws. They just haven't been enforced. The Packers and Stockyards Act is a very strong and powerful law that says they can't show preference. They can't discriminate. They do both with no penalties whatsoever. So it will require that at some point. And then we look at the other alternative of building our own pathway to the market. Well, the problem with that is it takes a lot of capital, and it's not what you want to do every day as a rancher. You don't want to have to sell meat. And all there's been is failure after failure. I mean, you look at from Coleman to Nyman to Maverick to all these brands that were, you know, started 30 years ago, they're all gone. You know, they're all under the ownership. If the brand is still alive, it's Purdue owns it, or, you know, Tyson owns it, or somebody else owns it, or maybe they're just making up fake brands like JBS does with Aspen Ridge and Gold Canyon. And so the pathway to the consumer is lined with predators. It's lined with people who don't tell the truth. Food fraud has never been worse. You know, you've got restaurants in Colorado Springs that sell under the brand of Aspen Ridge, for example. Well, that's just a brand of JBS, and they can say it's local because they have a plant in Greeley, Colorado. And so the market's very predatory. I have done it in Ranch Foods Direct. I have two retail stores. You know, it's been a real battle. It's been a bloody battle for 20 years. And, you know, we used to have five school districts, 23 Chipotles, several big institutional accounts that bought a lot of product from us. All of that business is gone now. And so now we're down to our retail business, a few restaurants, and we're trying to develop more in our mail order business. So it's just a constant fight. And the market, we have to accept the fact that it's not competitive, and we will need to join forces to see change. And so all these folks that I love, like Quivira and Holistic Management and Savory and Ranching for Profit, and all of those folks need to understand that there's a big, big piece that we've been unwilling to look at or didn't think maybe was important because we thought there really was a market. But the fact is, there is no market. And we've got to come together and work to restore that, because there's no way a rancher should have to sell beef. A rancher needs to be able to sell cattle. And a feedlot ought to be able to sell cattle. But if we're in a business structure where we're buying in a more competitive market than we're selling in other words, I'm a feedlot that buys calves and feeder cattle, or perhaps you're a backgrounder that buys calves and sells feeder cattle. But if you're selling in a less competitive market than you're buying in, you will go out of business. It just takes time.
So I guess my question then is, what is at stake currently for the U.S. cattle industry? And I guess you've kind of defined that a little bit, but I guess how we can flesh that out a little bit, I think, is to kind of give people a picture of what is the reality of the American pig and poultry producer today, what was it prior to vertical integration in their industry.
There's a really good book. It's called The Meat Racket by Chris Leonard. That is the story of the Tyson's family's rise to power on the backs of chicken farmers, workers, and the expense of the environment. And that tells the story of what happened in poultry. And so we've completely lost our competitive markets for poultry. And it's now they're being sued now for price fixing, and big retailers and food service companies are going after the poultry companies for fixing price and rigging the market. And then in pork, in 1998, we lowered the price. The big pork companies lowered the price of hogs to 8 cents, claiming there was an oversupply. The consumer never paid a penny less for pork, but the pork producers were forced out of business, and we've now lost about 95% of our independent family pork farmers. Recently, Purdue bought Nyman. And I mean, this was a huge problem to the people that were selling to Nyman, in hopes that Purdue will be benevolent, that Purdue will be nice to them. Purdue will continue to pay those prices that Nyman was paying. And you know, we've had private equity money come in. They bought Nyman. They bought U.S. premium beef, the national beef. And they've just now, a foreign packer, the second largest packer in the world behind JBS, Marfrig, is now the majority owner, owns over 80% of beef. We've had this whole movement towards concentration and consolidation. And the cattle industry was really the last that was left. But the thing that the cattlemen don't realize is that it's just as concentrated. 84%, 85% of steer and heifer slaughter are now controlled by four companies. And many of these same companies are also the ones that own and control pork and poultry. And they're also now into the fake meat. And so they're not leaving any stones unturned. They want to sell protein. And you are, as a cattle producer, a protein supplier. They honestly don't care about quality. They care about quantity. Bob Peterson told us that himself, the governor's conference in South Dakota in 1996. He says, I don't care about quality. We're going to cook your meat. You can tell us how you want it flavored. It'll be like pork. What a betrayal to the cattle industry who cares about quality and realizes that, you know, you don't get tired of eating steak. You don't get tired of eating hamburgers. And there's a reason. But we need quality that consumers want to come back to. And so we've all been kind of forced into this sort of commodity market. And remember when they used to pay premiums for better cattle? That doesn't happen anymore. They used to pay premiums if you vaccinated. That doesn't happen anymore. You know, if you backgrounded them and made them so they don't get sick when they go into the big feedlot, they used to pay you a premium. It doesn't happen anymore. And so we're just getting it worse and worse all the time. And so it's really going to come down to just, if we want to avoid the pork industry model, the vertical integration of pork and poultry, we've got to fight like hell. And we've got to come together. And it really is a bad deal when you've got the National Cattlemen's Beef Association there in Washington, as I said earlier, saying there's no problem. There is no problem, you know, and that we're all just uninformed, and us guys that raise hell don't know what's going on. Well, the opposite is actually true. You know, the Organization for Competitive Markets, which I'm a founding member of, has been around for 21 years, and we've been sounding the alarm for 21 years. You know, when I was involved in that case against IBP, and which now is Tyson, I got a phone call from Hughes Bagley, a former executive vice president of IBP. In fact, Hughes was credited with saving the company with his cattle pack program. IBP was having trouble getting rid of all the cattle and getting rid of all the parts and pieces every week. They just couldn't get cleaned up. And Hughes came in and put together what they call a cattle pack. He formerly worked for one of the big retailers. And he said, let's just get them to buy the whole animal. Give them a discount, but let's put together a cattle pack. Well, that was awesome. I mean, that really worked great with the big retailers. IBP had clean coolers every week, and it really transformed, you know, what that company could become. Well, when Hughes was ready to retire, they cheated him on his retirement, and he ended up suing them, which made him a friend of our case against IBP that we filed in 1996. And so Hughes told me the story about a Boston consulting company that came into IBP in the middle 70s and basically did an analysis and studied how could IBP do better? How could they, you know, grow and take a bigger share of the market? And basically this Boston consulting group said, You've got to cooperate, not compete. You must cooperate, not compete. And this is exactly what Hughes said IBP did. And so this whole idea that there's a market has really been a charade. It's really just been a pretend market for many years. And I've been playing, I played that fool's game. I mean, I built that feedlot in 1978 in the coldest winter in Kansas history. I worked my tail off. The next winter was the most snow in Kansas history. I scooped my tail off. It was all thinking that I would get rewarded at some point, all thinking that their market's fair. Remember when it used to blizzard across feedlot country and the price of fat cattle would go up? That doesn't happen anymore. It may go down, in fact. And so we know that from Hughes Bagley's stories that these big meat packers, Cargill, IBP, that at that time it was Montfort, but now JBS, these companies cooperate. They do not compete. The market is not real. There is no market. There may be a market at a sale barn in South Dakota, depending on who shows up. But the bigger feedlots that now have the sweetheart deals, the ones that are still in business, that are guaranteed not to lose money, where they're getting 10 cents a pound on their live animals they sell to Cargill at the end of the year as a bonus, that price is never reported, they're all hiring this, they're sharing the same cattle buyer. And so the competition is now being lost at the sale barn. And so we have a rally in Omaha, we raise heck as much as we can, and we put some money back on the market. It was a signal to the packers that we can't take it any lower without some serious pushback. But, you know, we probably are going to have to do what the folks in Ireland did last week, and that is just protest the hell out of things and by God, demand fair markets again. We're entitled to it living in this country. Our economy depends on competition. It depends on fair, open, and competitive markets, and we do not have that.
Would you say then that in your opinion and your understanding, the market is 85% of the way to being vertically integrated? If 85% of the animals slaughtered in this country are killed by four packers?
Well, it's even more than that, I think. The meat packer concentration is 85%, but as far as there being any kind of competition and anyone, you know, outside of that vertical model, getting a fair price, it just doesn't exist. It's pretty much taken over now. And if you're looking for a fair price for calves, you're going to have to probably background them. You're probably going to have some sort of an arrangement with a big meat pack, with a big feedlot, who in turn has a relationship with a big meat packer. And so there just isn't free and fair access to the market. You know, you've got a few fat cattle being sold up in South Dakota and at Yankton that once in a while, if there's some competition, maybe there's a couple of the independents, smaller regional packers that might come in and participate, and they might get a little competition going there, but it's just really, really rare. And that's not available to most feedlots. You know, I went from in 1978, I had 20 meat packers that I could sell to. They're for the most part gone. Today, I can only sell to one. I can sell to one meat packer, and that's it. And so there is no competition left anymore. And so in a way, we're being forced into a vertically integrated model that's honestly worse than poultry and pork, because you are a cost to be reduced. At least with poultry and pork, you know, you may have a flock to flock contract, or you may have some longer term contract in your pig operation, but you probably can pay your mortgage with your income. And if you can't, you can supplement it with a couple jobs in town. And they've structured the whole model of production to where it is low labor. And the labor that there is refugee type labor, people who are really on the outside of the economic system, really willing to work below costs, below living wage, without health care, without, you know, the things that a normal person would expect from life. And you're willing to work in that kind of an environment. And But as far as being out on the ranch and getting a price for your calves, you're way below your cost of production. You know, you as the investor, 85% of that capital is really put up by the rancher. And the meat packer, I should say the rancher and cattle feeder. The meat packer puts up about, and retailer put up about 15%. Well, they're knocking down, you know, 25, 30% returns on equity while the rancher's eating his equity. He's losing his equity with every load of animals that he sells. And so you're really worse off in a way than the pork and the poultry people, even right now today at this point. And, you know, we could ignore the fact that we should have a return on our investment. But as you drive around the country, just look at the shape the fences are in. When's the last time somebody built a new mile of fence on their ranch? Unless they had some outside income or some
equip
had money coming in from somewhere else. You know, we're seeing in my country of Northwest Kansas, hell, they just abandoned the four wire fence and put up a hot wire. You know, there's just so little income. And we see our main streets drying up and going away. And the biggest economic indicator, negative economic indicator in rural America, is when dollar stores show up. Dollar store basically sells the waste. It sells the truck wrecks. It sells, you know, the damage of the bigger food system that once was. And so when a company goes bankrupt dealing with Whole Foods, they've got a warehouse full of inventory. That's what you're seeing in stores. Mm-hmm. And of course, that just knocks out. I talk about how Walmart kills and consumes the prey in the way of Main Street and rural America, and the dollar stores eat the decaying remains. And so the, you know, we just got a dollar store in St. Francis, Kansas. Why did we need that? You know, so the local True Value Hardware and the local grocery store just has that much more struggle to stay in business. And so we've got to break through and we've got to restore competition. You know, we need to be able to have access to our own markets. And right now in the United States, it's the best market in the world for what we produce. It's just that we don't get to share in it.
Sure. So I'm going to title this episode Fighting Vertical Integration. So I guess I want to spend some time here towards the end asking you about kind of an outline for this fight, or how do we, what do we have to do? And then maybe define the win. What does a win look like? What's your ultimate goal for the U.S. cattle industry if you had your druthers?
Yeah, I think the one of the things that's on the top of the list for the Organization for Competitive Markets is to defund the opposition. OCM has been battling the NCBA for 21 years. The NCBA represents the interests of big cattle feeders and big meat packers. Yet they take our checkoff and use it. They use it against us. They lobby with it. They promote an industrial model, a vertically integrated model. You know, they promote this idea of the global round table for sustainable beef, which a typical rancher is probably more of a definition of sustainability than anything beyond the ranch gate, for sure. And yet they're now tell you how to ranch. And so we have to defund the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. We have to take the checkoff away from them. We have to reform the beef checkoff. And there's a lot of energy around that. And we've got lawsuits, with RCAF, they're doing some good work around defunding NCBA and their affiliates that also promote the vertical integration and the enslavement of a rancher. And so that has to happen, is to defund them. And then I think we really need to look at the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission. Rohit Chopra has been a speaker at OCM, the Organization for Competitive Markets annual meeting, the last 2 years. And he's chomping at the bit to break up the big meatpacking monopoly. It's worse than it was in the day of the jungle of Upton Sinclair, 1906, when he wrote the book, The Jungle. It's worse now. So Rohit Chopra's chomping at the bit. He's a minority a member of the Federal Trade Commission, depending on where the next election might go. Rohit could lead that effort, in which case then we could start the breakup of the monopoly power. And that has always been the biggest threat to any free society, is concentration of power and wealth through monopoly. And it's worse now today than it's ever been in our history. And so I think we had the Obama hearings back in 2010, and given all of the evidence they needed to reduce the power of the big meat packers, they did nothing. And now we have Vilsack out there stumping for Joe Biden. Vilsack, who absolutely did nothing. Vilsack, who allowed rotten meat to come into our country from Brazil, who allowed all of the anti-competitive practices you can imagine, drank the globalization Kool-Aid, saying, well, you know, Mike, we need big meat packers that can do business globally. This has led to the elimination of our competitive markets and local regional food systems, and has been a serious threat to our food security and food sovereignty. We're now a net food importer on a value basis. And this is the same country that was going to feed the world. And so the FTC, not the Federal Trade Commission, is the agency that can break up the big monopoly power in the packers. And retail is just as bad as the packers. They're more powerful, in fact, than the packers. And so the packers, can't sell meat higher as easy as they can buy cattle cheaper. And so this is why, we've lost $1,000 of our share of the consumer dollar over the last 30 some years. And so it's going to take some government action. And for those of us who think the government has done enough damage, especially through their regulation that is actually disadvantaged small business and independent operators like small meat packers, we've got to have some faith that only government can probably break up the monopoly power. And so history has shown that, and it's been very effective. In 1921, we broke up the big packers, restored competition, got them out of their vertical control of the marketplace. Things got a lot better, and now we need to do it again. But it's going to take the Federal Trade Commission. The Justice Department really isn't the agency to get it done. And so that's kind of the direction I want to see us go. And the bottom line goal has got to be to get 70% of the consumer food dollar back to the farm and ranch gate. That's what we got in 1970. 70% of the consumer food dollar, based on the same USDA numbers for fresh beef, got back to the farm and ranch gate when we had lots of meat packers. And every segment was profitable, from the cow-calf operation to the background to the feedlot to the slaughterhouse to the retailer. All were profitable. It was competitive. You had lots of options of where you could sell your product. A competitive market requires lots of buyers, lots of sellers. Today we have still quite a few sellers, but almost no buyers. So we have to fix that. But right now, if you look at what 1,350-pound finished steer from your ranch brings at a Walmart meat counter, it's $3,500 a head. And if you go to the USDA's fresh beef price, their scanner data, it's right at $6 a pound for the beef that comes out of a 1,350-pound animal. So if that animal yields 42% retail cuts, boneless retail cuts, if it's bone in, it's going to be 47%. But if it's boneless, which it typically is with boxed beef, it's 42%. Well, take that 42%, you're going to end up with about 560-some pounds of meat out of that animal. Times that $6 and change will give you the value. Now, that does not include the drop credit, the hide, head, liver, heart, tail, feet, and all of that. And that's worth $120-some dollars a head right now. And so that's on top. The packer can make good money if they get nothing but that out of the transaction. And so if we can restore competition and get that, basically that 30% of what we've lost to the consumer dollar back to the farm and ranch gate, that's $1,000 a head. Now that'll get split up between the feedlot, who's just in business to feed your calves and make them fat and sell them to a packer. But most of that's got to get back to the farm and ranch gate, where the biggest investment is and the most risk is also, and the work and labor is done. We've got to rebuild our ranching industry. And we got to look at the market, fair market, to be able to accomplish that.
So I opened up some questions in my private Facebook group, which I've been giving people a chance to try out through the end of the year if they want to send a request to join the private Facebook group, or I've got a MeWe group as well if you're opposed to Facebook, which I don't blame you. But anyways, and so I had a few questions come in that I wanted to go ahead and give you an opportunity to respond to. The first one is, how much vertical integration is too much? At what point do we lose control?
Yeah, I think you've got to look at it from the perspective of, is there a buyer for your livestock? In this economy, we as citizens are entitled to fairness in the marketplace, and so to the extent that it reduces competition, it's too much. If we lose competition, I mean, that's the way the antitrust laws are set up. That at least the Packers and Stockyards Act, which truly is passed to protect producers, basically what it says is you can't show preference, you can't discriminate, and to whatever extent that competition is reduced for any reason whatsoever, you can't do it. And so this is a law that has been ignored. It's we've now had precedent set by the judge in Alabama on the IBP Tyson case. We've had some really bad decisions by appeals courts that have now changed that precedent. We have to ask Congress to fix that. And that hopefully can get done in the next 4 or 5 years. Everything is way too slow. But to the extent that vertical integration reduces competition, you can't do it. And then people will ask the question, well, wait a minute, Calicrate, you own Ranch Foods Direct. That's vertically integrated. But Ranch Foods Direct does not reduce competition. Ranch Foods Direct shines a very bright light on the wrongdoing, on the amount that the big meat packers and big retailers are stealing. It increases competition. It increases competition if I can be in business in St. Francis, Kansas for corn, for hay, for inputs, for the calves that I buy from my neighbors that follow our protocol. That increases competition. It's size that matters. If a company has monopoly power, even within a region, they have to be broken up, because when you lose your market, you lose your freedom.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely agree with that. And you answered the next question I had, and I want to go a little deeper on that. There's a gentleman that is very smart, and really appreciate his always getting engaged in these discussions. And he says this: the only true vertical integration in the beef space seems to be for the premium branded beef offerings. Snake River Farms, Imperial Wagyu, Heart Brand all come to mind, where they want certain genetics, want cow-calf producers to align around certain production practices, and they pay a premium for that. They want them fed a certain way and to a desired endpoint. And regardless of who processes those cattle, the owner of the brand owns the marketing channel all the way to the consumer. To me, that seems like an opportunity that fills a gap in what has been a commodity system, where people produce what they feel like producing and then gripe about what the price is, versus producing something very intentionally for a target customer.
I really appreciate that. And the deal is, that's where the quality beef is coming from. And I've always said, if you want to restore demand, improve quality. And so what we've done at Calicrate Cattle Company and Ranch Foods Direct is we use a Wagyu bull on an Angus cow. And the meat is spectacular. I mean, people eat it and they just can't believe it. I mean, and the other thing you do is you get rid of the performance enhancing drugs that reduce, mm-hmm. that reduce tenderness, reduce digestibility, reduce flavor. You get rid of those. You have to. But understand that costs you $200 a head to get rid of the performance enhancing drugs, because you end up with a 150 pound heavier animal if you use them, and then a lower cost to gain and improve performance with performance enhancing drugs. So you got to get rid of those. So you've got to get reimbursed for your loss of giving those up. And that's going to be very much the case in the brands that you just mentioned. But the problem with many of those brands is they don't pay you enough. They don't pay you enough to give up the performance loss in giving up the performance enhancing drugs. And I mean, they need to be paying much, much bigger premiums And so there needs to really be more competition in that realm. And the other problem we've got is many of those livestock go through some of the existing big plants that are really predators in the marketplace. And so they really do control that pathway to the market. And so you've got a Sysco, for example, that would sell like your Snake River stuff. And I just don't think that that the Snake River guys are getting enough for their beef. There's a lot of pressure to pay less and less and less. I mean, you look what Wagyu was worth 10 years ago and look what it's worth now. I mean, the price has dropped significantly on the value of these really highly marbled animals. I mean, we'll feed those animals, you know, an extra year sometimes, make them weigh 2,000 pounds. I mean, they're just a spectacular, unbelievable eating experience. But then you can't sell the whole animal because they just want the middle meat. What are you going to do with the rest of it that's, you know, 65-45 lean to fat ratio? I mean, this is really, really tough. And so if you have open and competitive markets, you have all these choices of where you may might sell your animals. One of the things that I've found a real problem with is these third-party certifications. The third-party certifications go out there and they approve your animals as being humanely raised, no hormones, no steroids, no antibiotics, you know, raised on grass, all these things. And honestly, you can't trust very many of them. Many of them are standing as a gateway to the market. You have to pay them. You have to pay their lodging. You have to pay their food. You have, you're paying a whole bunch of extra money just to try to get into one of these sort of premium products that are in the market. But are you going to base the long-term health of your ranch on that, whether or not your grandkids are going to that operation, or is it just a band-aid or something that's a little better than what the neighbor's getting? But honestly, it's not enough. Like I said, if we could get competition back in the marketplace like we had in 1970, you should be getting $1,000 more per head somewhere between the ranch and the feedlot that you don't have today.
Can you wrap this up with two or three calls to action for people who are listening? How can they get involved? What are they? What can they do to make their business more resilient in the intervening 4 or 5 years between now and what you have laid out as a win? Can you just throw out some calls to action in those regards?
Well, first of all, I'd fight the beef checkoff. I don't want to pay at the NCBA. I'm happy to pay it if it's being used to help the rancher and with good research and good promotion, but we've got to have a competitive market for that to work, and we don't have that. So I'd fight the checkoff. I'd certainly cancel any membership to the NCBA or any of those affiliated groups, whether they're state or otherwise. I would defund the problem in the organizations that are not representing our interests. As far as, you know, what we can and join OCM, the Organization for Competitive Markets. RCAF is doing a lot of good, they're not afraid. They're a very, Bill Bullard just does a phenomenal job as the CEO of RCAF. It's a good organization. And I'd be sending my membership money to them. They aren't afraid of litigation, and they've been successful in much of their work. And that continues to move forward. And partner up with consumer groups. You know, this idea that we have to be alone and that the consumer is our enemy because they might want humane treatment, which I'm sure you already provide very much so for your livestock. We have to connect with the consumer groups. These are our customers. You know, years ago, I found common ground with the Humane Society of the United States. And basically, when I met them and they said, look, 95% of our members and our supporters eat beef. They just don't want to eat Tyson's beef. They don't want to eat Cargill's and JBS's beef. They want to eat yours. How can we connect with you so that we can buy your beef? And so don't make enemies out of consumer groups. And of course, it's in the interests of big meat packing and big retail to keep cattlemen divided. And so it's easy to divide them, you know, on some of these issues like animal welfare. And I'm not saying animal rights. I'm saying animal welfare. And what kind of a farmer would put a sow in a gestation crate or a chicken in a battery cage or a feedlot animal in mud up to his belly in a 150,000 head feeding operation? I mean, nobody would. A rancher seeing that in a feedlot would cry. He'd want to take those animals out and get them back on the ranch somehow. So we need smaller, independent, local, regional food systems. Support that. Support the things in your own community. Get on the school board and by God, make them buy local ground beef. Buy from the ranchers in the community. The senior center, they serve a free meal every week to seniors. You know, buy local. Somehow figure it out. Don't let the dollar store sell their crap to the senior center or to the old folks home or whatever. The hospital. Why are we feeding sick people such bad food? And become better citizens in our communities and buy more local. You know, I talk about those five school districts that we had 7 or 8 years ago that bought a lot of ground beef. It was wonderful, but they're all gone now. And they've gone back to that, you know, pre-cooked, you know, wore out dairy cow, you know, whatever additives are in that patty that is not healthy for those kids to eat. But it was all instigated by a 9-cent increase in the serving of a carton of milk. Why was that? It's because Dean Foods, by God, rigged the market, cooperated with Sinton, the Grupo Lala group out of Mexico, and they decided to raise the price of school lunch milk. No one did anything about it. I lost the business of the ground beef in our region, but protest that. I mean, parents today don't even realize their kids are eating crap. Again, what happened to the Good Food Project? So I'm saying get active at your local level. I love what they're doing up there at Wall, South Dakota, with the school lunch stuff, but make sure we pay those ranchers for those cows. Yeah. You shouldn't have to donate them to get to use your meat. And so we just need a lot better policy. And I think making that transition from aggressive price shopping consumer to a citizen is going to be required. We all have to focus on trying to make that happen.
Appreciate your time today, Mike. And I guess, what is the work of OCM? And I've got written down here Meat Racket, OCM, Ranch Foods Direct, any other links you want me to throw up at the show notes page, workingcows.net/117. Workingcows.net/117 is the show notes page for today. So if you got anything else you want me to share there, I would be happy to do that. But
yeah, if you go to competitivemarkets.com, you're going to see a lot of the things, the issues we work on and what some of our initiatives are. But, you know, I'd sure promote RCAF on there. I know there's just a lot of consternation and division, you know, much with the NCBA and some of the other groups that we can't get along. But that's also the reason that we're prey and why we lose our battles. But go to MikeCalicrate.com, too. I've got a blog and a listserv that people can take a look at. And of course I'm on Facebook. I on Facebook some of the things I'm concerned about and some of the good things too that we're working on that are exciting. So there's just a lot of fun that can be had if we had a market. Fortunate to have Ranch Foods Direct and a pathway to market for myself. It's been a very hard and difficult path. But it lets you, if you can control a little more of what your income is, you can start to do some really cool and innovative things on your ranch. You know, I love that word regenerative. It's sort of been stolen a little bit by some of these bigger guys, but if we can take on that sort of regenerative approach, holistic regenerative approach, to where we can really start to bring some life back to our ranches and our ranching communities. That would be my hope that we accomplish that. And so, you know, look at some of this regenerative agriculture stuff. It's really exciting what we can do with grazing and all of that. And one of the things that concerns me though is with some of these grazing practices, like the adaptive modified paddock grazing, the very aggressive, highly managed grazing, we can easily double our carrying capacity on our ranches while improving the soil. But the problem is, if you don't have a market for what you've got now, what are you going to do if you double your numbers and get back the first cost of the cattle when you sell those to the feedlot?
Right.
And that's a real honest, true story that happened on a very large scale between 2014 and 2015. So yep. We got to be cautious a little bit there too. So,
yep. Roland Cruz talked about that on one of his episodes, and I've heard him tell the story live too, about a guy who basically increased his stocking rate, and he sat down next to him very depressed at a bar one night, and he said, "Thanks for helping me grow, go broke faster." So
exactly. But you also got to accept that, you know, the rancher has a sort of a morality that they operate within, and it's a good one. But the people you sell to at the meatpacking level have a much broader latitude in that regard. And so honestly, you've got to know it, you got to accept it, and you've got to act accordingly.
Hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Mike, for your time.
Thank you, Clay. Thanks for the opportunity.
Lots of stuff to think about there. Again, as I've repeated many times, I'm not telling you what to think, just giving you something to think about. And if you've got pushback on that, again, the offer is open and extended through the end of the year to join the MeWe group or the Facebook mob on Facebook, whatever you want to do. There will be links to both of those things in the show notes page for today, as well as links to all the things we talked about at workingcows.net/117. Not really sure where we're going next week. We are going to have another discussion with another leading thinker in the cattle industry, and I hope you'll tune in for next week's episode 118 of the Working Cows podcast. We'll see you then.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.